Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Lisa Colon Delay, and you're listening to Spark My Muse and Soul School Lesson 301, Downright Awestruck. Today, we're probing our sense of mystery and wonder. I came across an article in Nautilus magazine. It's a wonderful magazine about science and human nature and consciousness. I found an article by Kevin Berger with a title that is a little curious to me called The Dark Side of Awe, Probing Our Sense of Mystery and Wonder. It belies a much more positive ending to this article, and I'm going to read pieces of this article to you. It features a professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, and his book called Awe, The Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. This is Professor Dacher Keltner. I hope I am saying that right. A little bit of a tongue twister there. And I'm going to read sections of this article to you and then my takeaways at the end. One of the reasons why I want to bring this type of material to you today is because our world is full of things that will strip away our awe, bring us into smaller worlds that are pitted against each other. And what awe does is it makes us feel that we are part of something much bigger. Awe is a very natural human emotion seen across cultures, and it is really important for our survival. Keltner's definition of awe is the emotion we experience when we encounter vast mysteries we don't understand. Awe quiets the nagging, self-critical, overbearing, status-conscious voice of ourself or ego as well. And most of us might not realize that. Say we climb to the top of a hillside and we can see further than we've ever seen before from that area. We might just feel a sense of wonder. This is a really far expanse. I can see way over to the next town. I can see all these mountains I've never seen from this vantage point before. I'm just this little speck in this great big vista, this great big expanse. So from that point, we don't hear this self-critical, overbearing voice of our ego chattering away when we're in the midst of awe. So it's a very positive, healthy experience to have. The article author asks, that abandonment of self is what makes people vulnerable to demagogues. For some reason, I'm thinking of that overwrought movie version of Pink Floyd's The Wall, which makes a connection between a rock concert and a Hitler rally. But in terms of awe, maybe that link makes sense. The emotion at the concert and the rally is the same. Might that undermine your thesis about the social benefits of awe? And Keltner says, no, it doesn't. A lot of religious and spiritual practices, forms of awe, reduce the likelihood of depression. They benefit life expectancy, and they make people happier. But I know what you're saying. Those experiences may be involved in religions that are racist, oppressive, and sexist. The compassion we feel in religious experience has justified slavery. I love my people. I love all children of God, just as long as they're not people of color or indigenous people, for instance. And so you have the case where awe leads to a collective commitment that's bad for sectors of society but benefits the individual. There's always that tendency in society. Every social tendency that can lift up the greater good has the same power to wipe out huge sectors of society. And so we always have to be critical. We need your critique. Kevin says, you write, quote, the awe felt in encountering humanity's better angels can counter toxic tribal tendencies. How so? Keltner responds, on balance, the evidence we've gathered is awe reduces polarization and increases charity. Moments of awe make you include different people in your sense of tribe, so that suggests awe counters othering. But if you're talking about white supremacists beating up immigrants, you get into another level of analysis. Can awe counter it? I think so. But it's one of the biggest questions that was left by my book. You're one of the first to get at this question hard. But as fine-grained emotional scientists, let's get precise in what we're documenting. And here he's referring to if awe can be toxic in groups. He says, I get a lot of questions about Trump supporters, and when I look at Trump rallies, I don't see awe. I see rage. Yes, you can feel rage collectively. It's awesome to be with 18,000 enraged supporters. But is awe really a proximal determinant of rage or genocidal tendencies? All emotions can be shared collectively. We can share humor and love and compassion, and we can share rage. So that's the critical test. I can use scientific measures to ask whether these emotions are shared experiences of awe, or are they really about shared pride and rage? It's an empirical question that deserves research. Kevin asks, experiences of awe seem fleeting. The other emotions in our daily lives seem to drive awe away. Would you agree? Keltner answers, well, all emotions are fleeting. They lead to shifts in your neurophysiology for 30 minutes at most, and parts of the emotion or conscious elements of it are very fast. So yeah, they are fleeting and ephemeral. But awe is interesting because it really changes how you think about the world. You think, I'm part of something larger than myself. We've documented benefits of awe that last for a week. You go river rafting for half a day and your mind is blown. And a week later, you feel less stress. But you're asking the hard questions, Kevin, and this is a big one. How much and for how long will awe shift you? I don't think we want a human psyche or nervous system that is so shifted by these momentary emotions. We prefer homeostasis. We'd like to return to baselines. But the literature around happiness and gratitude suggests the effects of awe may last longer than other momentary emotions. Kevin writes, awe reduces polarization, as you say. How do you think that happens? Do experiences of awe get us to let down our ideological guards? First, here's what I like about awe. It points toward what is meaningful to you, the significant moral themes that matter to you. Do you care about social justice, beauty, pleasure? Do you care about harm, community? Awe makes you more aware of the big narrative or ideology, the political ideal that you want to be a part of. And every individual is different. We all resonate with different moral political themes, and awe shines a light on that. A healthy society should allow for multiple ideologies. What's more, we've learned that awe increases your perspective. It makes you less polarizing, more rigorous in your thoughts. So let's hope that reliable experiences of awe don't make you vulnerable to the kind of simplistic forms of reasoning that are part of an ideology. Let's hope that it makes you pluralistic, makes you recognize there are multiple views, including ideological views. So that's the first part. We don't know the second part, whether awe can make you become less ideologically fixed in what you care about. Kevin says, you define awe as occurring, quote, when we encounter vast mystery that we don't understand, but that sounds incomplete. What I think is more awesome is getting to know how mystery works. The more I know about a piece of music, the more I enjoy it. Do you know what I mean? I do. And you're hitting the deep theme of the book. Awe is fundamentally about mystery. It cues the human mind to construct meaning, make processes to understand mystery. Mystery is the engine of creativity. Kevin asks, is awe universal? I ask because, as you know, there is a relatively new science of emotions that says emotions aren't hardwired reactions. Rather, emotions are concepts constructed by our brains. And so emotions like awe can vary from individual to individual, culture to culture. Keltner responds, we published a paper in Nature that the expression of awe is about 75% universal. When people from around the world see fireworks or shooting stars, their whoa speaks to a universality in their facial and vocal responses and getting goosebumps. So there's a deep mammalian universal structure to awe. Kevin asks, but don't individual cultures shape our perspectives and emotions? Keltner responds, they do, but you've touched a nerve. You have to consider individual differences within a culture. If you look at individual differences statistically, they beat cultural influences time and again. Our natural selections form variations. We are more similar across cultures than we are across individuals. You can find Chinese individuals like me temperamentally. We're going to have similar emotions. That's predicted by evolutionary thinking, and you can't account for that from constructivist views. Awe is in the realm of self-transcendent states, which gets us beyond self-interest. It's fundamental to human survival to be part of a community, to do things collectively, to share food, to alloparent, which means to help parenting offspring who aren't your own. You need a whole suite of processes to orientate to other people's interests and welfare. Awe does that. It makes you more collective and cooperative. You feel like you're a part of a social network. It also has effects on cognition that get you to shift out of an analytical mode and to see systems around you. It's like, oh, I get it. It's not just me. I'm part of this community. Awe is vital. Kevin says, you write, wealth undermines everyday awe and our capacity to see the moral beauty in others, the wonder of nature, or the sublime in music and art. How does wealth undermine awe? Oh man, responds Keltner. When I first started studying awe, everybody was like, isn't this just an emotion for the privileged? But the opposite is true. Wealth comes with a sense of transactionalism, which is counter to the expansiveness of awe. Wealth tends to amplify our sense of self-interest. The wealthier I get, the more individualistic I become, and the more I am aware of my own desires and interests. That's a countervailing force to awe. Because wealth makes you more solitary and more inclined to spend time on your own, you're less likely to share feelings of awe. Here's yet another reason why our culture is struggling, why economic inequality is such a problem. Kevin writes, what's the best way you can cite to show awe is not reserved for the well-off? Keltner responds, the blues. I would argue the most important music in the United States is African-American music, and that music comes straight out of slavery. The blues and gospel music are a form of awe and awe-based expression and creativity. And we should take spirituality, too. Spirituality tends to track to lower socioeconomic conditions. The spiritual imagination tends to be activated by states of deprivation. How so? Trauma and illness and death destabilize our sense of safety, our sense of integrity, our sense that the world is predictable. Destabilizing our sense of who we are is horrifying. When I interviewed Stacy Bear about his years in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, he said that he was always oscillating in a mixture of horror and fear and terror and awe. But when we encounter trauma or are in a state of physical deprivation, the mind gets to work. It says, let me, through the power of mystery and awe, arrive at a new understanding of the world. Let me make sense of this. And that was portions of the article entitled The Dark Side of Awe, Probing Our Sense of Mystery and Wonder by Kevin Berger from January 29th, 2024 from Nautilus Magazine. It was his interview with Dacher Keltner, professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley. And I have a few takeaways I'd like to share. I think it's important for us to know that awe is vital. Awe is much more difficult to have if you have abundance and wealth. Larger groups of people and encounters with nature produce awe the most. We may watch a program or hear something or read something that produces awe, but that doesn't happen nearly as much as encounters with the big things of nature or the big things of life. So experiencing more awe makes us healthier and happier people and more socially flexible and charitable and kind. Hearing this, of course, makes me realize for me and for everybody else, we should be getting more awe in our lives regularly. We should be making sure that it happens to us, seeking it out, as it were, just like we might seek out nutritious food. And it means that being indoors, at least for me, is not going to be a way I encounter very, very often or very deeply. Many of us spend most of our time indoors, and so this is one of the least likely ways to produce awe in our lives. Awe is fleeting, and it might, like any emotion, alter us for about 30 minutes, but they are finding that certain experiences of awe can last up to a week. When you experience awe, you are experiencing, I am part of something larger than myself. It puts things in perspective in a very positive way, where your problems feel reduced. I've definitely felt a sense of awe while swimming in the ocean. I'm swimming there, I'm looking around, from my vantage point, can't see a single person. Just water upon water upon water. And I think, this is absolutely incredible. No one as far as I can see. I'm just a dot on this blue planet, in this vast space, in this one of billions upon billions upon billions of galaxies in a universe I can't even contemplate. And I get awestruck. So we should do things that will incite awe in us and others we care about. We should pick things to make sure that this happens. So instead of just staying up another night, binging on that next episode in a series on Netflix, as we might be wont to do, get in a little walk on a clear night. Notice the stars and the moon, even if it's just for a few minutes. Gather that awe into yourself. On your way home, give yourself a little extra time. Take the long way. Find a place where you can see for miles and just take that in for 5 or 10 full minutes. Live largely so that awe comes at you. Enjoy singing at church among others so that you're all on the same page, or enjoy music at a large concert hall or stadium or a festival. Enjoy the exuberant roar of happiness in the cheer of a crowd at a sports game. When we notice a whole bunch of humans experiencing the same thing at the same time, I think we can be overwhelmed with a sense of awe that we're a part of something happening, and it gives us feelings of connection. It is the powerful sense of awe that brings hope and gratitude and incites greater kindness. That's not just something that I have instinctively felt. That is something that this professor at the University of California at Berkeley knows empirically from the testing. So make sure that you find yourself downright awestruck, not just today or this week, several times a week, but as much as possible. It is vital for you, and it is vital for our species. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope this brought you some comfort and peace. And until the next time, I wish you the very best. I wish you great awe.